Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today we continue our series, An American Bookworm in Paris, recorded recently when, as a guest of the cultural services of the French Embassy, I was in Paris for the very first time. My guests today are three French writers, Olivier Cadiot, Marc Chodolenko, and Grégoire Bouillet. Paris is in fact beginning to grow on me, particularly today because I've come to the place where I most wanted to be. POL editions. I am in the offices here. I am told that what there is of new writing in Paris is published by the people at POL, and it is true. I have been reading books in translation that are available in America, and the first writer I'm going to talk to is Olivier Cadiot. He is the author of a novel called Colonel Zoo. It is published in America by Green Integer, and it is a genuinely hilarious book. Now, in this book, I see traces of Raymond Queneau, of Ishiguro's The Remains of the Day. It seems to me to be a fantastic and apocalyptic parody. What went into the making of Colonel Zoo?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm from POL. POL. Paul. I made a book before this. This is also translated. The name is Former Future Fugitive. And it's the second book of a sort of saga. Can we say that? So
it's an ongoing saga.
Saga for laughing, with a character of Robinson Crusoe. I love the way in English you said Robinson Crusoe, because by us we say Robinson Crusoe. It's very different. Colonel Zoo is the story of the Robinson Crusoe lost in a strange chateau. And it's the man with the butler. It's a butler story, you know, butler story. It's the genre in England, for example. And he wanted to do his job very too much. He's a workaholic.
Because it takes place as World War II is on the horizon, we get the sense of the Superman, the race that will be supreme, that will drop its human influences all too small and become, in a sense, the Übermensch. Mm-hmm. And this, in a way, is what, for the time being, our nameless hero, who is derived from Robinson Crusoe, this is what, for the duration of this book, he aspires toward. A kind of omniscience and omnipresence. He has secret cameras. Mm-hmm. Secret cameras to observe the actions of his
masters.
Yes. Both his masters and his fellow workers, who he spies upon to make sure that they are being superhumanly efficient, because in fact they are there to spy on an aristocracy who may in fact be in the league with the Germans.
You tell the story, it's fantastic. Better than me with my English, yes. The American army wanted to make one soldier for to do the war alone. To be, and you see, when you see the MTV, not MTV, CNN, it's not the same. And you see soldier like an universe. They have all, they are Robinson Crusoe, because they can. They can kill one country and be eternal too. That's the dream of the army. Just one soldier. It's the old tradition of Middle Age, tournoi, no? Comment on dit?
Tournament.
It's very archaic in the same time.
Yes, yes. Like knights and ladies and lances
exactly.
and steeds.
And it's,
yes.
In Edith's book, and I think in all my work, there's my pleasure is to not to make anachronism, but to mix archaism, old things and modern thing or future thing, but not and to make
fuse.
A bizarre operation because literature for me is like, you know, perhaps
a strange machine
between past and future, and this man is same time very old fashioned like a butler, but very new age, if I may say.
Along with the poet Pierre Affary, you have in the past edited a review, the Review of General Literature. These volumes, there were two of them, are as big as telephone directories, and they're meant to treat literature as if it were a daily occurrence, like going to work, that these are the tools out of which one makes literature. And so there are all sorts of strategies and techniques that appear almost like tricks of the trade. And these books, so huge, were very inexpensive. They were at one point sponsored by public service organizations that then failed to provide the promised funding. But nevertheless, the bookstores were flooded with these huge volumes, anthologies of contemporary writing and the things that inspired contemporary writing, and they disappeared. They are out of print. They're among the prized possessions of their owners. Now, when you were putting together these books, what did you discover then was characteristic of French writing?
I think with Pierre Alféry, we wanted the price, the question of price was very important. We wanted to make something free access and the contrary of a traditional literature review, very expensive and very rare, very difficult to find. And we wanted to do the contrary because we wanted to give to people to give the idea that to write, we need everything.
Thank you very much, Olivier Cadillot, for joining me.
Thank you very much.
In America, Colonel Zoo is published by Green Integer. Of course, being an American, my French is insufficient. And so what is happening for me in French letters is what has been translated in French letters. In this case, the book Mordecai Shams by Mark Shodolenko. It really is a favorite of mine, and it's published by one of my favorite presses, Donkey Archive Press. And when was it written?
I think it was published in 81 or 2, so it's been written around the 80s.
And it is a philosophical novel, in a sense. It's a philosophical novel by a man who is using the techniques of self-investigation, but who is incapable of drawing conclusions or reaching conclusions from his investigations. And so each section is a separate meditation, beginning with a provocation of a kind. Mordecai Shams would like to invent a machine. He doesn't know what it will do, a Shamsette, because it will have his name, it will reflect him, but because he doesn't know himself, he doesn't know the Shamsette, he feels that in this imaginary projection of a Shamsette, he will be able to find out something about himself. But because he hasn't invented it yet, well, you see, the thought becomes circular. The possibilities of forward motion are inhibited on every side by problems of reality, self-knowledge. And what we find is that we are in a quiet whirlpool of self-cancellation. What led to the creation of this character?
I think it was Sam Beckett. I was at that time reading him a lot, and I was inspired. That's it. What would you say? Do you think it's very Beckettian?
Clearly, Beckett is in its range. It's in its spectrum. I thought that it was like Beckett in the sense that Beckett is like Descartes, that this is a set of improvisations, sometimes jokes, but sometimes sombernesses that are the consequences of beginning to think that you are because you think.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one of the most surprising things about this book is that the book is concerned, despite its constant presentation of philosophical torment, with pleasure and satisfaction. And as I've traveled around Paris, and I say to people, I'm speaking to Mark Shodolenko, they all say, oh, he's quite a dandy. He's very concerned. He's an analyst of pleasure, and he is an eroticist. And so I'm interested in the relation between pleasure and philosophy for you.
Well, philosophy is utter pleasure for me. I mean, it's the pleasure of the mind. I mean, there's nothing more pleasurable than reading Heidegger or Hegel, even though I don't think I understand one tenth of what they mean, of course. I mean, I think that I don't know how you translate it. Phenomenology of spirit? Phenomenology of spirit?
Exactly.
Yeah. Is like a fantastic travel into bliss. I mean, it's just, you know, because I think the pleasure of pleasures is the pleasure of the spirit.
Well, that's what it seems to be, at least in this book, Mordecai Shams, the result of a self-interrogation. And to what extent is it a self-interrogation?
I think to all extent. I mean, that is it, you know. Funny thing is, as you were talking about it, I realized what it was about. I mean, the book, and I realized that I'm going back to that kind of writing right now, 30 years afterwards, and I think that might be my real nature, the one writer I really am is that kind of writer. Well, right now, actually, right now, but I think so. That guy, I mean, someone who knows there's no truth, but there's a way to truth, you know. I mean, we all know that. I mean, the thing is that truths are very well known. They are lieu commun, and you can't and go over that. I mean, I don't think you can transcend lieu commun because they've been truth for as long as humanity speaks. But inside those bonds, you can have nice travels, you know. You can have fun, you know, going this way and that way and, you know, frolicking about. So that's what I'm trying to do.
That was Mark Shodolenko, author of Mordecai Shams, published by Donkey Archive. This is Michael Silverblatt. We'll be back after this short break. Thank you. This is Michael Silverblatt, and today we continue our series, An American Bookworm in Paris. My guest is Grégoire Bouillet. And his book in English is called The Mystery Guest. And as soon as I opened it up, I was fascinated because there is always a question of what happens when you transform life into literature, or when you read a book and you transform literature into life. These questions have been being asked in literature since Don Quixote. The book, The Mystery Guest, opened with a piece of information that the book was being written on the day that the French writer Michel Larry died. Now, I know that many listeners do not know the work of Michel Larry, but he was one of the writers who, in writing his autobiography, was transforming himself into literature and presenting many things that had not been presented before. He wrote a book called Manhood, in which he examined all of his personal scars and weaknesses, deficiencies, liabilities, and presented this as a work about manhood. He didn't have to do what an American would do, which would be to analyze machismo. He was content to be Michel Larry, sad to be only the man Michel Larry was. And this examination, this self-examination, continued through many volumes, two of which have been translated by the great American translator Lydia Davis, one of which, Manhood, has been translated by the great American poet and translator Richard Howard. And so when I opened the book and I saw today Michel Larry died, I knew that here was a writer who would grieve over the death of a writer I love and therefore had to be a friend of mine. Could you tell me about the influence on you of Michel Larry?
At first, I would like to apologize about my English, which is so bad, as you can hear. I wouldn't like people to believe that I write in French as I speak in English, because I hope I don't. About Larry, I want to say that he's a very important writer for me, because when I first read him, I understood the real power of literature. You know, when I began to read books, I did it as everybody does. It was to have a good time, to escape from my life, to forget money troubles or sad love affairs, forget the absurdity of the world and the anguish to live and die, and so on. You see what I mean? And yet, when I finished these books, my life was the same as it was before. Nothing has changed in my life, nor in my consciousness of life and death, nor about the way I saw the world. Books never used to give me answers. They were just entertainment. But when I discovered Lewis, he gave me a new perception of literature. He said, books aren't just entertainment, but also a great way to find answers about what happens in life, whatever it is. For example, we fall in love with somebody and not with somebody else. Why? Is there a reason? Or is it an accident? In French, we used to say reality is stronger than fiction, and everybody can experience how is it true in his own life all the time. So Lewis says something like, literature should be about bringing answers to life. And to me, good books are the ones that help us to understand how to live and to see the world in a new way. You see, there is a challenge in writing a book, and I love that. I love the idea of the challenge. It's the reason why I talk about Lewis in my book. I wanted people to remember that literature is not only about good stories with a good beginning or a good ending, strong characters, sex, violence and feeling and so on. But a real issue for humanity. Issue is a good word. Yeah, okay. And I think it was important to say that, especially nowadays, when so many books seem to forget this challenge in literature.
Now, in The Mystery Guest, what happens on the day that Michel Lerys dies is that the author, the narrator, gets a call from an old girlfriend. She had dumped him. She hadn't. Oh, let me say, we are in the house
my
host, Grégoire Bouillet, and it is an honor. You'll hear laughter and the sound of a family. It's a pleasure to be doing an interview in an author's house and to be invited here. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
The narrator gets a call. He had been dumped 4 years before by a woman who now is calling to invite him to a party. She has a friend who is an artist, Sophie Kahl. Is that how you say it?
Sophie Kahl. Sophie Kahl. Yeah.
Who will, for each of her birthdays, she has a ritual. She'll invite the number of guests that is the same as her age, and she will invite one mystery guest, and one of her friends will invite the mystery guest. And so, thinking that the woman who had dumped him will at last tell him why, and that the world will become a whole place again, where answers are available to the mysterious questions, the painful questions of life, he agrees to come to this party, and in the course of the book, he very much becomes a character in the book. This is a party that he comes to, and it will take him a while to recognize it, but he suddenly recognizes, in fact, that this is the party for Mrs. Dalloway. And at that party, there is a meeting between lovers who have been separated for a long time. In fact, the woman who had invited him has a favorite book. It is Mrs. Dalloway. So I wanted to ask you first about the relationship between literature and autobiography.
I'm not exactly interested in writing about my own life. Because my life is the same as everybody else's, more or less. In fact, I'm not exactly writing an autobiographical work, in any of my books. My books aren't the story of my life, but a way to reconsider situations and events that I have experienced. My point is that events and situations are trying to tell us something. And my work is to grab, as honestly as I can, what they have to tell, their meaning. It doesn't interest me to describe them. Or, in other words, my point is that life can be seen as a fiction, a real fiction. It's very important for me to see life as a real fiction. For me, the opposition between literature and autobiography is not really relevant. The opposition seems artificial to me. I don't think there is a reality on one side and literature on the other side. My bet is that literature can arise from reality. And it's what I try to do with The Mystery Guest and with my first book. It was called Report on Myself.
Now, the remarkable thing here is that when this author, narrator, discovers that he has been reenacting a scene from Mrs. Dalloway, he discovers that what he will have to do is to become a writer himself, that otherwise he will be caught in a reenactment, that he will be forever reliving
a moment in someone else's great work. And now, in order to master his life, he will have to write about it. Tell me, then, about the difference between being a character in a work and writing that work.
Oh. If reality is a fiction, everybody becomes a character, more or less. And so do I. But what really matters is the role that books play in our lives. Because I'm always surprised that some people write books and some others read them. I don't think a book is just an object, a market value, as most people think of it nowadays. But I think some books have the power to get their way into our lives. Because we exist in language, books can talk to us and we can act and speak through our reading. I have tried to write about one of the repercussions of reading. In my first book, as I said, Report on Myself, I showed how the Odyssey by Homer had a powerful effect on the writer. In The Mystery Guest, it is Mrs. Dalloway, the novel by Virginia Woolf, which plays a major role in the life of the female character. In the end, the reader will discover how deeply she has been influenced by her reading. Without it, her life wouldn't have not been the same. But she doesn't know it. It is a typical case of a book changing somebody's life. And for me too, it was a revelation to discover that. It was new evidence that life is a fiction. And I think my job as a writer is to show that.
That was Grégoire Bouillet, author of The Mystery Guest, An Account, from Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and Report on Myself, from Houghton Mifflin. This program is one in our special series, An American Bookworm in Paris. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Grateful acknowledgments to the cultural services of the French Embassy, Jan Perrault, Odile Foumont, Fabrice Gabriel, and to my translator, Sandra Schmal. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Now it's Book of the Mouse Club time. To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse Club.